Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is January 27th, and I actually just finished recording part one in a new series on self-esteem that I'm doing with Wes Bertrand. After that, I made the mistake of going to a website called Facebook. You should never do this. You know, delete that account of yours. You'll survive. But there was a bit of a dust-up. There's this group. Now, see, I just moved to Keene, so I'm becoming more aware of things that are going on here in Keene. There's a group called Stop Free Keene on Facebook. And if you don't know, here's a little background. There's kind of a hub in Keene, New Hampshire for free staters, libertarians, voluntarists. But Keene, politically, is very liberal. So there has been a lot of friction between the established liberal political environment in Keene with the libertarian, often perceived as Tea Party, Koch brothers-funded free staters. Now, as you know, liberals are people who care deeply about things like compassion and understanding and tolerance, fairness, and debate, and open discourse and free speech. So it seems like the way that that manifests outwardly as a political conversation, at least from my basic observations, is because of this animosity that they have towards free staters who don't stand for things like compassion and tolerance, apparently. What the liberals here like to do is they make Facebook groups where they fantasize about bad things happening to free staters. That's a little dark, sure, but you certainly can understand the perception of threat because most people don't really understand what voluntarism is. They've never even heard that word, and there's a lot of confusing misperceptions about the word libertarian. So in one of the posts on this page, Stop Free Keene, there was a link to an article on Salon that intrigued me. And to this point, this is a little bit of an experiment because I'm going to try to react to this in real time. So maybe this is a disaster. Maybe this is kind of okay and becomes bonus content, or maybe it goes fairly well and it becomes a podcast. But I wanted to try to read an article from Salon and react to it in real time. I have, at this point, only read the first paragraph of this article, and it upset me a little bit. So I wanted to get into this. It's called Confessions of a Former Libertarian, My Personal, Psychological, and Intellectual Epiphany. And we're going to try and do this in one take. There's a little introductory sentence here. I was a Buddhist, concerned with world suffering, and I could no longer reconcile my humanity with my ideology. This is written by Scott Parker. There's a picture. He looks liberal. My goodness. And I'll link to this in the show notes. So let's read the first paragraph and let's talk about what happens. This is all I've read so far. During college, a friend admitted he was confounded by my politics. He didn't know how to reconcile my libertarianism with my other commitments. We were Buddhists and vegetarians, and I knew exactly what he meant. The tension centered around compassion. He wanted to know how someone connected with the world's suffering wouldn't adopt a more compassionate political perspective. Okay, well, we see where this is going. I think it might have said, no, it says my psychological and intellectual epiphany in the title, but if you know a thing or two about Salon, you know where this is heading. You know what political ideology he wound up embracing. The compassionate one, liberalism, right? Which certainly neglects the entire history of the 20th century, not just in Europe, obviously, but also in America. I was talking recently with Thaddeus Russell about the death toll of the liberal progressive presidents in the 20th century, to name three: Woodrow Wilson, FDR, and Lyndon Johnson. So confounding to me is the idea that this ideology of control eventually became connected with the idea of compassion and peace, which is interesting. But in that first paragraph that I read, I mean, he's really not only poisoning the well against libertarianism, which he does without defining it. I haven't read ahead, so he might give a very thorough, very in-depth, clear definition of libertarianism that allows you to make, you know, a rational decision based on the presentation of multiple viewpoints and evidence. He might not. But so far, the way this reads to me is that he's poisoning the well against libertarianism and stacking the deck in favor of progressivism or liberalism by connecting it with compassion in a way that really isn't open to question. So let's move on to the second paragraph. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see what happens. And I want to be open-minded. Okay, I want to be open-minded. So let me take a deep breath. I've had a lot of coffee. So the last sentence in the first paragraph, he wanted to know how someone connected with the world's suffering wouldn't adopt a more compassionate political perspective. Moving on. It was a reasonable question, one that I had asked myself regularly. My stock answer was, while I supported compassion in the form of assistance to those in need, I opposed the clumsy government mechanisms we relied on for it, not to mention the veiled coercion behind them. Where did anyone get the right to enforce their values at the barrel of a gun, meaning taxes, no matter how noble those values might be? I'm interested to see how he's going to turn this around. Let's keep going. Pretty by-the-book stuff. Libertarianism represented to me a matrix of freedom that could be collapsed onto any particular set of individual values. It was a simple formula to live by. If enough people value X, those people will pay for X, whether or not X equals somebody else's interests. Government intervention was at best superfluous to this outcome, and at worst, distorting of the collective will, measured as the aggregate economy. Well, first of all, that is definitely an oversimplification. It was a simple formula to live by, right? And he's rooting his arguments against libertarianism in one thing that libertarians might have to say about economics, right? But he hasn't to this point. I mean, he's hinted at it, but he hasn't really come out and confronted the guiding first principles behind the philosophy of libertarianism. So now he's kind of giving it a definition that's convenient for him to move forward with, a simple formula to live by. If enough people value X, those people will pay for X, whether or not X equals someone else's interest. Now, what holds together the whole ideology of the left? I mean, isn't it the idea of democracy, the will? All right, well, let's not get into that yet. Let's move forward. Actually, no, let's not. There's one more thing that we need to deal with, because there's some very important setup going on right here. And he's trying to help you see libertarianism. Supposedly, like, that's kind of the gag here, right? You see libertarianism through the eyes of a libertarian, and maybe I'm wrong, and then he's going to show us how silly it is and why he became a liberal. But there's some language that I don't like in paragraph two. And it's very, very subtle, but I think we understand that sometimes just using one word effectively can really give a nice push to a pretty flimsy argument. So let me read this sentence. My stock answer, in other words, an answer that I just sort of retrieved without thinking, I just found another one, that isn't even the one I was thinking of, was that while I supported compassion in the form of assistance to those in need, I opposed clumsy government mechanisms. All right. Well, this treatment, and libertarians do this too, and it bothers me sometimes, that government is like the guys from Super Troopers or Reno 911, just a bunch of nitwits running around bumping into each other, really sells the destructive power of government really far, far, far short And that libertarians just see government as like silly or inefficient. You're really, really missing the point. And I don't know how you journey to the left and support the government waging wars in foreign countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, or you support a government engaged in this terribly destructive drug war. I mean, you know, if you have been a libertarian, the government is far more than just clumsy. Interesting word choice. When my friend offered the natural response, "What if people fail to provide enough for those in need?" I resorted to the tried and true strategy of telling him the problem wasn't a problem. The real problem was taxation or regulation or minimum wage or a failed incentive structure. If people were in need, it was because the government was preventing the market from providing for them. Okay, well, here's another thing I don't like, and I think that people on the right are very guilty of this very frequently. Obviously, the left-wing ideologies are somewhat susceptible to this as well. Instead of, I don't want to use global warming as an example, but there's a lot of people who are against the idea that climate change is a real problem. Whether that's true or not, these people have never cracked a book on the subject. Now, certainly, there's plenty of people on the left who do the same thing. And on the left, especially in the modern political conversation, there's a lot of scientism, right, where people are worshipful of science, but they really don't understand it or practice it. And the reason why I think that happens is people who are progressives or liberals look at who they see as being their political opponents or a caricature of who they see as their political opponents. People like Pat Robertson, right? These sort of evangelical conservatives and all these people who I guess are in Congress who say things like legitimate rape and we don't have to worry about global warming, and they reference the flood from the Bible. Well, if you are seeing all of politics through that dichotomy of people who disagree with me say this, so obviously, by comparison, I must be pretty damn smart and right. Yeah, that's sloppy thinking, but it makes sense how people on the left arrive at that, because they see their political opponents as being so mystical and simple-minded and dumb that if those are the only two choices, and you can see that there's a real strong effort to mix, to neglect what libertarianism is and then mix it together with the right, the traditional or mainstream establishment Republicans, well, that's a very convenient thing to do, right? Because then it's just stupid too. So I don't like this idea that happens a lot in politics, that if you don't like the solution, you pretend the problem doesn't exist, right? So liberals propose a solution called the Affordable Care Act, right? And there are a lot of Republicans, I think both in government and on talk radio, who counter the proposal of the solution called the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as they call it, with the idea that the healthcare system is not broken. Or we have the best, or they'll say something like people come from other countries to get healthcare in the United States because our system is so great. Isn't it a short research project that would help them arrive? And maybe some are better than others, but like the problems with healthcare stem from the fact that it's a 50%+ socialized system already, where the people who have the most frequent, urgent, and serious healthcare needs are already fully subsidized by the government, and that's, you know, veterans through the VA, that's senior citizens through Medicare, and poor people, and they're subsidized through Medicaid. So that would be, I think I'm getting a little off track here, but I don't like the idea that he is summing up libertarian thought as, if you don't like the solutions, the responsible, collective, forward-looking, progressive solutions to important problems, you just pretend the problems don't exist. I think that that is a trait of Republicans, for sure, but I don't like how he's trying to mix the two together right there. Whoa. All right. So as he goes on with what his old arguments were, I'm very intrigued, right? Because I see eye to eye with him on, or the old him, the unenlightened libertarian him, and I'm very excited to see what created the change, right? So let me just take that last paragraph again. My friend offered the natural response. What if people fail to provide enough for those in need? I resorted to the tried and true strategy of telling him that the problem wasn't a problem. The real problem was taxation or regulation or minimum wage or failed incentive structure. If people were in need, it was because the government was preventing the market from providing for them. Well, the market, as I mentioned recently, is also severely distorted. And because of the government school system, I think that the things like self-sufficiency, not just in living, but in learning, is severely undervalued. And obedience to authority or deference to authority. This was something I was talking about with Wes before the show. Go into a convenience store. Right? It is just filled with chemicals and poison, right? But that's what consumers want to put inside of themselves. And that's very sad. And I feel like a liberal when I say, you shouldn't do that. That's bad for you. That's an irresponsible decision. And it frustrates me when other liberty-minded people say, oh, that's free. You know, McDonald's, that's freedom. You know, you should have the freedom to do whatever you want with your body. Yeah, you should have the freedom to do whatever you want with your body, but I don't think that should be like a libertarian message on nutrition, you know? So where was I? Man, how do people do this? They just talk, they turn on the mic and just talk, and they don't go off on all these tangents. Let me back up. No editing. So you go into the convenience store, and you see all this poison, and you know, an attitude that a lot of people have is, well, the people who put that shit in the bag know more about food than I do, so if they'll put it in a bag, it must be okay for me to ingest. And that's the most thinking that anyone does about these things. And most of the problems that I think that exist in society, that progressives in some cases actually do care about solving, are linked to education and or the failure, the lack of education, or the success of government school. So he moves on. What's interesting to me now is not why this kind of thinking is wrong, but why, well, that's convenient, but why it was once so attractive to me. I was really hoping he would tell us why it's wrong. I hope he gives us some idea of why this is wrong. I found my way to libertarianism in my teen years when I began reading some of its introductory text. I'd like to know what those were, and was attracted to the internal consistency of its policies. Okay, let's take a note of the word policies, because I don't like where that's going. And I'm kind of starting to see what the next thing that might happen here is going to be. If you accepted the fact that the individual was sacrosanct and the government's only role was to protect the individual, everything else pretty much followed. Unlike mainstream liberalism and conservatism, which were constantly engaged in negotiations between social and economic freedoms, libertarianism was systematically clean and neat. So much so that I quickly stopped concerning myself with how ideas played out in the world. The ideas themselves were enough. Okay, so what's happening here is that he's comparing apples to oranges. Libertarianism, at least how I define it, is a philosophy. It's not a political party. And certainly there are a lot of people who are active in politics, mainly on the right, who do inject libertarian talking points or maybe even some policies based on libertarian ideas. But libertarianism doesn't have a political platform, right? Libertarianism is not in this world of left and right, where there really isn't much difference because both sides concede the use of force is okay. Libertarianism is not a button that you push to change things. It's not a new party that you elect. It's something that we evolve into. So if he's trying to couch this in the libertarian policies, leave a bunch of people, you know, out in the cold, and it lacks compassion for that reason. Well, if these policies were implemented tomorrow, lots and lots of people in this country would die. That's the facts. And I don't know if we're just talking about, you know, certain libertarian policies like ending government programs, if we're talking about a complete push a button and we have the complete absence of the state. Anyway, people die tomorrow if government is gone. And I absolutely understand, and I've heard the argument before, and I totally agree that government is killing people today. Absolutely. I think that it's just an important thing to acknowledge that people die tomorrow if we wake up and government is gone. If you think I'm wrong and you have new arguments against that, please send them to me. I hate saying that. I obviously, it's very inconvenient to have to acknowledge that, but it's true. So your thoughts are always welcome, but let's press forward here. What is missing from most people's understanding of this philosophy is, like I said before, this is something that we evolve into, and it is a complex system of thinking more rationally about economics, thinking more rationally about each other, thinking more rationally about education, thinking more rationally about parenting. A better understanding of logic, a better understanding of philosophy and the lessons of philosophy and the lessons of history. And yeah, the government does have this 15,000-hour program where you would think people would learn some of this stuff, but they learn none of it, and that evolution has not happened. So I don't like the idea that he's comparing libertarianism to liberalism and conservatism. I think that is disingenuous. And I think if he was a libertarian, that he should know better. So last sentence in that last paragraph. So much so, I quickly stopped concerning myself with how ideas played out in the world. The ideas themselves were enough. Absolutely. In the world of complete insanity in which we currently live, libertarianism seems pretty far-fetched and utopian. As a kid, you learn to refute anyone's theory by snidely mocking. In theory, communism works. When I was in college, I knew that communism did not work, even in theory, and I was happy to tell you why. Only libertarianism worked in theory. Well, it doesn't matter if something works in theory, by the way, if it doesn't work in practice, right? So theories work if they're practicable. So to say something works in theory, maybe he's going to expand on that. That, in switching the terms of the joke I made myself its butt, was regrettably lost on me. I don't think that was a very good sentence. Maybe I misread it. But when the lens of ideology grows so thick it's all a person sees, a sense of humor is often the first thing to be occluded. So what accounts for my transition from orthodox libertarianism to an unremarkable liberalism? Great, this is what I've been waiting for. At the risk of putting the cart before the political horse, I am not an isolated reasoning subject and individual actor, but a complex and conflicted human in various social and environmental contexts. And the reasons I abandon libertarianism are personal and psychological, as well as intellectual. It felt good to be libertarian. I could win political debates to my satisfaction, parenthetical, by applying the internally consistent reasoning I so admired to any issue. I'd love for him to explicate what this internally consistent reasoning is. I think it could help his salon readers maybe make a more informed decision. Maybe, maybe not. My reluctance to compromise was a virtue that straightened my posture. I took my rigidity as a sign not of narrow-mindedness, but of integrity. The consequence of careful advancement from first principles. Oh, my goodness, he said it. Wow. Thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of people are like one or two Google searches away from being libertarians, I think. Yeah, there's another interesting thing. It's subtle, and maybe this is somewhat speculative, but I already mentioned the tendency of people on the left to try and connect or conflate libertarianism with the mainstream political right, or at the very least the Tea Party, the people in Congress who are Tea Partiers. And one of the words that they've been using, a real buzzword in that echo chamber, is obstructionist, right? So he's talking about how he's standing tall and seeing this as integrity, but that is a way to call that word obstructionist, or these silly Tea Party ideologues who are just being obstructionist while serious people are trying to get important things done. Now, that's subtle, and like I said, maybe I'm reading into that more than I should, but that's what it conjured up in my mind. So I would think that if people are sympathetic to his arguments, that would happen for them as well. There was something else there too, wasn't there? The phrase, my reluctance to compromise. How stubborn and uncooperative. I mean, all we're really talking about here, you stubborn bastard, is giving one group of strangers who don't care about us and want power the privilege to use force against us. I mean, do you have historical examples of that compromise going poorly? So those three words, that little phrase, has a lot of weight and consequence. My reluctance to compromise. That's the most dangerous compromise I can think of. This particular kind of coherency put me self-satisfactorily and peacefully to sleep on many nights. Amen, brother. But it also sometimes felt bad to be a libertarian. I don't like that people I cared about regularly thought I was a smug asshole. Amen, brother. I didn't like that so often in debates, I sounded to myself like a smug asshole. Not my intentions. Say what you will about the positions, I always held them sincerely. But the words themselves. They didn't sound compassionate, as it got harder and harder to remind myself that they really were supposed to be. Yeah. In heated political debates, from my observation anyway, not much of what is said really sounds compassionate, especially to, the other person if they're holding a different position very, very firmly. And the other thing that I think could be added that would be helpful is that oftentimes words have connotations, right? And you have to think about who controls a lot of the conversations as far as what words mean to us. This is something we've been over on the show several times before. But a word I've been thinking a lot about recently, and we talked about this on Free Talk Live last week. There was another liberal who made a video, Five Stupid Things About Libertarianism. And his first objection was that it's selfish. Selfish is a word that, you know, over the course of the 20th century has developed a very negative connotation. To think that you're, you know, you should be a higher concern to yourself than society, you know, you should worry more about your own house, then you concern yourself with the important matters of society. This was a lesson they tried to school into us in the 20th century for sure. Self-sacrifice. This strongly connects to the Prussian roots of our schools and the philosophy of German idealism. And the superiority, the primacy of the nation state, especially over little meaningless individuals. Nobody understands that, though. You know, I'd be interested to talk to this guy, in talking to this guy and seeing like the depth of his scholarship, or his investigation rather, into the philosophical roots of these ideologies or political positions. He seems, this was what was a little bit exciting at the beginning of this, that he has a better understanding of libertarianism than most people on the left. So let's press forward. I really, but the thing that where he says, this is what set me off on this tangent here, they didn't sound, the words he used didn't sound compassionate, right? Well, those words exist in a philosophical container, a philosophical context that people have been put in to think about politics, to think about their role in society. And even society is a euphemism, their role subservient to the government. When you talk to people about this, like, do you know your, you know, you talk about their relationship to the state, you just sound crazy. You just sound like a silly person who's looking for things to be upset about. You're almost a caricature of a contrarian. So yeah, libertarianism doesn't sound compassionate, especially in heated political debates. The ideological purity at the heart of libertarianism was so true, I was certain only good effects could follow from it. Well, that's very naive, in my opinion, right? And that makes libertarianism look, as an idea, look naive as well. Because there's always going to be problems in the world. There's always going to be bad things happening. There's always going to be bad people. You know, what we're saying is, like, let's not give them nuclear weapons. The plainness of this was so apparent, the plainness of this was apparent enough that I was actually perplexed when others didn't see it on face value. Whenever an interlocutor pointed to a real-world counterexample, I was ready with a distinction between the applied and the perfect libertarian policy. I understand that. But again, what's missing, what's dropped from there is context. Right? There are no perfect libertarian policies in a statist world, in a world where some have this privilege to use force and coercion. Right? All, you know, libertarian policy, it's like when Republicans try to insert free market principles into something like compulsory government school. We'll call it vouchers, you know? That way, these unions and bureaucracies can have a taste of what the free market will look like. No, they don't. No, they won't have a taste. They'll crush it. So the context is very important. And obviously, when you try to go up with your little dropper of, you know, perfect libertarian policies and drop it into the raging rapids of statism and coercion, yeah, it does very quickly start to look quite untenable. But the truth an ideologue is at pains to accept is that no life can live up to ideology. We are a messy species living messy lives, and we are lucky for this. The intellectual libertarian wants the world to be a kind of ideal world it can never be. Oh, let me finish this paragraph before I go friggin' nuts. And no, I'm not going to go nuts. I'm going to calmly respond to that. He, and it's often he, amen, brother, is unable to live with ambiguity and compromise. The beautiful, it is a kind of beauty, logical edifice of libertarianism is built on the faulty premise that this is the kind of world that is built on logical edifices. In that paragraph, I see a disturbing amount of projection, right? If you think that intellectual libertarianism is built on, you know, this faulty premise that an ideal world can be built, how the hell did you wind up on the political left? which is entirely, I mean, I know he, most people who write for Salon and read Salon would not describe it this way, but it is entirely an ideology of control for your own good. Because most people, and he's hinting at this, he's not coming out and saying it directly, don't know what their own good is and need to be guided. You know, and the world is messy and illogical. So we need logical, orderly guidance. And that will be achieved through empowering the state economically. But don't worry, because in a personal sense, in a private life sense, you'll be as free as can be. Never works. Never works. I'm sorry, money rules the world. And governments, especially in our system of government or the United States system of government, money is always used, the control over money and not just, you know, the creation of money and the management of money, but also taxation allows for this carrots and sticks social control system. When you surrender control of that to the government, to think that you're still going to have a peaceful and free society, add to that what kind of people are attracted to government power, that's more naive than even his presentation of libertarianism, I think. And then, you know, there's this other clever switcheroo here as well. It says, but the truth an ideologue is at pains to accept is that no life can live up to an ideology. No life, no individual can live up to an ideology. Well, even if that's true, some of us are trying pretty damn hard. And I don't think anyone is just going to resign on that statement alone. But here's the big switch, the next sentence. We are a messy species, living messy lives. Well, what happened to the individual? Now we're talking about everybody. Now we're talking about not just our entire civilization, but people who were hitting each other with rocks 40,000 years ago. That sounds messy. You know, I'm trying my best as an individual. And I know we've said before that individuals are smart and groups are idiots. But that's interesting how the reinforcement for a sentence about individuals is a reference to the entire species. The discomfort I felt with libertarianism was the discomfort of my ideas not aligning with my experiences. My thoughts and feelings were at odds. The feeling nagging me was that I couldn't reconcile my humanity with my ideology any more than my friend could for me. Over time, that feeling became a reason in its own right. I saw, as many libertarians see, a world tangential to this world we live in, which is the world I always felt like I belonged to. The end. Not bad. That's actually a very powerful ending. I'm being totally sincere. Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with efficacy. This is or self-efficacy. We talk about this on the show all the time. You know, you don't start with trying to end the Fed. And I really connected. I was listening to History So It Doesn't Repeat, or I was watching History So It Doesn't Repeat, where Richard Grove interviewed Charlotte Iserby. And I don't think she would describe herself as a voluntarist or a libertarian. I mean, she would probably, based on the way she talks, she would probably describe herself as like a paleoconservative. But man, at one point in that discussion, she said, sometimes I feel like I don't exist. And we try to imprint just on the very world around us, you know, on a level where we actually can or should be able to affect change in other people. It can be very frustrating when we don't understand the momentum pushing against us. You know, I felt like sometimes, I talked about this in the last episode of the series that I did with Daryl, I don't exist in my own family. done thousands of hours of research on the subjects of parenting, schooling, child development. And I've got two brothers doing Elf on a Shelf. So when he says, the discomfort I felt with libertarianism was the discomfort of my ideas not aligning with my experiences. And why am I going off on that? Why did I just tell that whole story? Well, we live in a world that needs to evolve. And when you look at the kind of world, I think, a voluntary world that many of us envision, the obstacles to achieving it seem so insurmountable. The idea that none of us have ever felt, that none of us have ever stopped and thought and said, God damn, the things that I'm saying are so unrealistic. Of course they are, in the context of this world. A world we inherited from people who had no problem with the subjugation of women and children and different religions and different racial groups, and had no problem with the idea that might makes right, and had no problem with fucking royalty and imperialism. Of course, when we step into the world that we inherited from those ideologies, yeah, the stuff we say sounds absolutely insane. But in a certain sense, you know, I still want to belong. I mean, I would much rather, I mean, maybe I'm different than some people. Maybe some people are attracted to this philosophy because it's iconoclastic. But, you know, I don't want to be in relationships that are maintained by me not talking about things. I think that sense of belonging, that feeling of belonging, is a legitimate need. But my goodness, at what cost? And when I hear people, here's where I connect with Scott Parker, the author of this article. I hear people in New Hampshire use the phrase liberty in our lifetime. Well, I don't know what that means, right? And obviously, our mission with this show, and, you know, obviously, this is a lesson that I learned from people like Wes and Stefan Molyneux, is that, yeah, you want to try and get as much personal liberty as you can in an unfree world. Harry Brown, Freedom in an Unfree World. I highly recommend reading that book. And then the School Sucks Project isn't about reforming education or saving the world. It's about being a resource for people who recognize these things. And they say, yeah, I've got some problems. Maybe school created some of them. What can I do? You know, it's here. That stuff is here if you need it. It's not for everybody. It's not for most people in this world. And I accept that. But liberty in our lifetime, if it means, you know, a higher level of personal freedom, lovely, great, I agree, go for it. Let's do all we can for ourselves to live freer lives, emotionally, intellectually, socially, you know, with respect to romantic relationships, yes. And strive for the highest level of personal freedom we can attain. If you're talking about society, or the landmass called the United States, it's not going to happen. Now, why do I say that? That's very discouraging, Brett. You're not being optimistic. I came from the left. Scott Parker came from libertarianism to the left for its compassion. I don't remember passing Scott Parker on that road. We could have waved or high-fived. Going to new places. But I never bought into the idea that a voluntary world would be achieved in my life. Because my experience was working with inner city kids and seeing how bad that situation was. You know, and this button that I would not push of a voluntary world tomorrow, that results from this experience. And there's some places that we can look out there in the world around us, and it's very, very sick, and it's very, very dark. And sometimes, quite frankly, I'll recover from this. We're not going to end on this note. This flash of a feeling comes over me like, wow, I'm really wasting my time. Now, that feeling goes away fast. And we'll come back to that and neaten that up, I promise. But just hold that thought for now. Okay. Now, with respect to Scott Parker, when I started reading this article, I just want to tell you an honest suspicion that I had. But it's just a suspicion. And I'm prefacing it with saying it's just a suspicion. I want to be very clear about that because I don't even want to let this idea subtly slip into your head. This is not the Fox News mainstream media trick of some people say or experts say. That's not what I'm trying to do. This suspicion that I'm describing leads to a point. To me, when I got about two paragraphs into it, so I read the first paragraph by myself, when I heard him describe what libertarianism is, the idea that he understood it and left it is very, very hard for me to believe. No matter what his strong sense of compassion told him to do, and I'd be interested in getting his definition of that word. Dictionary defines compassion as sympathetic pity and concern for the sufferings or misfortunes of others. So if you associate compassion with liberalism, you need to get some history books, Scott. But my suspicion was, I have no proof of this, let's be super clear, was that this was somebody who had never been a libertarian. This is somebody who had never been an individualist. Or at the very least, and again, this is still just my little suspicion, somebody who kind of wandered into the fad of libertarianism in college and then went and did a couple Google searches to find out more about it to write this article. Pure suspicion. And I don't have a real explanation for how this happened because I don't know Scott Parker. And I couldn't conceive of how this could happen to me. I'm not saying it's impossible, but right now I just don't understand how you go back or how you go to liberalism, period, from a true understanding of libertarianism. So here's his sleight of hand, right? Now, in the article, just to sum up, he's made a pretty good case for this philosophy, libertarianism, I mean. He hasn't said much in defense of liberalism. The second to the last paragraph, this is where the magic happens, okay? This is where the magic happens. I said that twice. The discomfort I felt with libertarianism was the discomfort of my ideas not aligning with my experiences. My thoughts and feelings were at odds. The feeling nagging me was that I could not reconcile my humanity with my ideology any more than my friend could for me. Over time, that feeling became a reason in its own right. All right, first sentence. The discomfort I felt with libertarianism was the discomfort of my ideas not aligning with my experience. Do you understand what you're doing here? Do you understand what you're involved in here? Do you understand that this is about change and evolution? Libertarianism is not a competing political platform. At least not what it really is. Okay, I understand this word is being thrown around willy-nilly, and it's very discouraging and frustrating at times. Who's using it and why? It is not a competing candidate on a congressional election or in a presidential election called libertarian, you know, L. My thoughts and feelings were at odds. Sentence two, good. Your thoughts can be rational. Your feelings are often not. And the fact that you felt nagged by not being able to reconcile your thoughts and feelings, or as he describes it here, through his liberal lens, my humanity with my ideology. right? So your feelings are your humanity, your thoughts, your ideology. Irreconcilable? Tell us about your process. Concluding sentence in that paragraph, over time, that feeling became a reason in its own right. And my suspicion started at the beginning. But again, it's just suspicion, and I don't understand how this happens. And my lack of understanding is not aided in any way by his complete failure to explain how this happens. Because that's not an explanation. And maybe he was just like two sentences short. Maybe two sentences could change that whole paragraph. If he said something like, my efforts to reconcile my humanity with my ideology, my efforts to reconcile my thoughts and my feelings were A, B, and C. Because, yeah, thoughts and feelings are different, but we take our feelings to our thoughts to try and understand them. This seems like a dodge to me. This is like when somebody says, and blah, 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 the end. Now, I say all this because the title was so damn intriguing. My personal, psychological, and intellectual epiphany? Where is it? It sounds like you just gave up. Right? It sounds like you had the truth and cast it aside in favor of comfort and conformity. Also a nice finish. You know, I mean, this guy's not a bad writer, and I don't write at all. So pardon me while I give him recommendations, but maybe a success story or two? Right in the header, it says, as a Buddhist concerned with world suffering, tell us about how your rejection of this silly college boy ideology of libertarianism has led to greater realizations of compassion being delivered. I'm not, you know, and I'm not saying there aren't examples of that. I'm just saying give us something. Before I finish, let's just tie things together, okay? Because I'm talking kind of cynically about this idea of liberty in our lifetime. And that's I'm taking that to mean political liberty, a voluntary society. I'm saying that I had this experience working with these kids, seeing how institutionalized and systematized and really, really deep the roots were of some of these problems, and understanding that it is not a switch you flip or a 5-year process or a 10-year process. It's not a generation away. And the state going away, what we identify as the state going away, changes nothing. Because more than 100 years ago, the schools started putting the state inside all of us. And that's just what my experience and my study of history has taught me. I hope I'm wrong. But the idea that I would turn my back on what I know is right, and this is from somebody who's messed up a lot in life, the idea that I would throw out personal integrity, consistency, and freedom from, in many ways, at least in this context, freedom from contradiction. And I would embrace something that better aligns with my feelings, that doesn't rub up the wrong way against my feelings about what I see in a schooled, violent, statist world, inherited from the complete insanity of the past. That's inconceivable to me. But something was definitely schooled into me. Concepts, practices were definitely schooled into me that I'm pretty confident I educated out of myself. Surrender and sacrifice. But that's the great lesson of this article, right? I surrender. I did the responsible thing. Yeah, I went through a fad, you know? And even though that little fad from my oppositional and idealistic youth was rooted in a rational, morally consistent philosophy, a stable lens through which I could view an imperfect world. I made it to the adults table. I safely and triumphantly arrived back in the real world of liberalism and collectivism. How did you do it, Scott? I surrendered. That's pretty poetic.